From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Indira Lakshmanan of the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, and this is On Point. Unlike family, the bond of female friendship is a chosen one. From trusted confidant and avid listener to shoulder to cry on, female friends can be a support system for the ups and downs of daily life. They can also be amongst the most challenging relationships, sometimes the hardest to break up with, to be honest with. This hour on Point, navigating the emotional landmines of women's friendships. You can join us on air or online. What makes a good friend? Have your closest female friends gotten you through the toughest of times, celebrated your successes, or been the only ones to see you for who you truly are? Or have they betrayed your trust? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is F. Diane Barth. She's a psychotherapist in private practice, and her new book is I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. You can find an excerpt of the book on our website, onpointradio.org. Diane, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Indira.
Well, so glad to have you. And you've been a psychotherapist for more than 30 years, so I'm guessing you have probably heard it all. But what are the common themes that you've heard from women when they talk to you about their female friendships?
There are a number of common themes, but one of the ones that I found most fascinating while I was talking to people, I talked to close to 200 women while I was working on getting information for the book, and then I also have talked with the clients over the years. One of the things that I heard over and over again was this idea that what you were just saying, that women's friendships are supposed to be so supportive, so powerful, so attuned, so meaningful, and that while there are many women who have those kinds of friendships, there are also many women who don't and who feel bad about themselves because they don't have those kinds of friends or because they're not the kind of friend who likes to go to the, you know, on a girl's weekend every so often. And what I really found was that one of the main themes that I got involved in was talking with women about how it turns out there are many different kinds of women's friendships, and there's not one way that we're supposed to be friends.
Well, I want to get back to something you flicked at there, this notion of exclusion and feeling that our friendships don't live up to the sort of ideal of female friendships. But before we go there, I want you to tell us what sets women's friendships apart from our other relationships with our mothers or our sisters, for example.
Ah, interesting. Well, as you said, one of them is that we choose friends, or we often choose friends, and we don't choose our families. But in many ways, friendships are similar to relationships with family. And in many cases, women told me that their closest friends were their mothers or their sisters, or in some cases, their spouses. On the other hand, I think that friends provide, sometimes they provide an opportunity to really get to know somebody, or for somebody to know you in a way that maybe your family doesn't know you. They provide a way of separating from family. I talked to a number of women who told me stories, like one woman who said that she thought that from the very beginning of childhood, her friends saved her from a very difficult, problematic family.
Well, you know, we all think about our friends being as sort of our surrogate families at important times. And, you know, we see this in popular culture. We see this in famous people. I want to listen to Amy Poehler, the comedian, as she reflected on hosting the 2013 Golden Globe Awards with her best friend, another actress and comedian, Tina Fey. Poehler and Fey apparently can do just about anything as long as they're together.
Hosting the Golden Globes in 2013 with my life partner, Tina, was so fun. You know, sometimes Tina feels like a very talented bungee jumping expert. All it takes is for Tina to softly say, "We can do this, right?" And suddenly I feel like I can jump off a bridge.
I know, that's really poignant, actually.
Yes.
The idea that your best friend can make you feel like you can do anything.
Yes, yes. I heard many stories like that where, for example, one woman was telling me when she was a young mother and was traveling for work, and the first time she had to travel for work, she was very, very anxious about leaving her children. And she did. She was not quite as open as Amy and Tina. She called her best friend, who didn't live in the same part of the country that she lived in, and she said, "Okay, I'm getting ready to get on this plane, and I want you to promise me that if something happens to me, you will make sure that my children get new clothes for every new season of the year." And her friend said, "Huh?" And then she laughed and she said, "Oh, you're nervous about this trip. Of course I'll take care of that, but you're going to be fine." Hmm. And it's the same kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a lot of us who have female friends also have male friends. So I want to know,
yes,
what is it that makes our female friendships, our BFFs, different from our relationships with our male partners or our platonic male friends?
I think that one of the most wonderful things that I discovered while I was gathering information for this book is that there's not a single answer to that question or to any of these questions. So some women say they can talk to, some women would tell me that their husbands were their best friends, but that their women friends saved their marriages. And how that worked was that they could talk to the women about things that they couldn't talk to their husbands about, just because their husbands weren't interested. One of the guys I talked to told me that his wife would talk about how she needed him to just listen to her feelings, and he always wanted to solve her problems. So he said it was really, really great that she talked to her friends, because they would listen to her complain about her brother for hours and not expect her to do anything. And when she complained to him, he would tell her what she should do about
I hear you on that. And, you know, I feel like with my own father, when I tell him my problems and my issues, that this is a lifelong thing, he always is trying to solve them for me. And finally, he figured out at some point, oh, you just want a sounding board. You just want someone to vent to. You don't actually want me to solve it. But women seem to instinctively get that. All right. I want to bring in one of our listeners into the conversation. Lexi is calling us from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Lexi, you're on the line.
Hi, Indira. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Doing well. I just, I heard in the intro, you were talking about friends, how female friends can be just a really supportive force in women's lives. And that's certainly what I've experienced. I remember my sophomore year of college, I had an experience with an assault, and I had a lot of friends, but it was in the friend group that the assault happened. And I just have one female friend, Katie, that stuck with me through all of it. She was pretty much the only person that believed in me. And here, 2 years later, she's my rock and the person that I feel like I could probably rely on more than almost any other person other than, like, my mom.
Lexi, thank you so much. What a beautiful story. I mean, I'm so sorry that you suffered that assault, but how wonderful that you had someone who really believed in you and you know, validated you. Diane, you must hear this from your clients quite a bit.
Yes, I hear it from clients. I also heard it in the interviews I did with so many people. Yeah, Lexi, I'm sorry that you went through that also. I think that one of the other sides of this coin is that women friends are not always our support, and that sometimes men can be more supportive than women, for some women and in some situations. And sometimes the women who we thought we could count on are not the women who we can finally count on. One woman told me about having been quite ill, and her very closest friend just disappeared during the illness.
Mm.
Another woman who she was not particularly close to sort of stepped up to the plate and was there a lot for her. But then she said that after she got healthy again, and she couldn't even actually remember how it had happened, but she and the other friend had reconnected. And she talked to the other friend about what had happened, and the friend said, "I'm really, really sorry that I deserted you. I felt terrible about it. But I couldn't stand to be around you when you were so helpless." So sometimes the reasons that women friends are not as supportive as we think they should be are not, they're not self-evident. And so one of the things I kept finding out is how complex these relationships are.
I think that's true, that we find that sometimes, you know, we're going through a crisis and people who we don't expect to be our closest friends step up because they're good crisis friends. And yes, other people who are the everyday friends can't handle the pain and the fear of if a child is going to die or if a family is going to get divorced. But they're there for you in other moments. And that's, I mean, I feel like that's a deep insight. All right. Well, one of our listeners, Jane, writes on our website, I had a female best friend, but she was so jealous of me that we stopped talking and I haven't spoken to her in 8 years or so. We couldn't even go out together because she'd get mad if men approached me instead of her. I even wrote her a letter to try to salvage things, but she never responded. Most of my friends now are men, but I'm wary of the vast majority of them. They always seem to have an ulterior motive. Diane.
Wow. That actually brings in so many of the issues that different women talked about that I think are really important parts of the dynamics or the complexities of women's friendships that we don't, that doesn't fit into our sort of image of women as BFFs. So one is the whole issue of jealousy. We are not good with jealousy. I don't think men are particularly good with it either, but women don't like for there to be a conflict or a rift in our friendships or in our relationships. And so we have troubles managing jealousy and competition.
This episode of On Point is supported by 23andMe. This Valentine's Day, give someone special a DNA kit from 23andMe. They can receive over 75 detailed online reports about their genetic ancestry, inherited traits, and even information about their health. Go to 23andMe.com/onpoint to get 20% off each kit, now through February 14th. Offer includes free gift wrap.
You have access to the entire world of NPR with your smart speaker. Ask it to play NPR or your local NPR station to check the news while you get ready for work or fix dinner. There's a new radio in your house, and it's easier than ever to listen to Morning Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and more. Just ask your smart speaker to play NPR or your local NPR station.
This is On Point. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. We're discussing the joys and complications of women's friendships. You can join our conversation. What's the secret sauce for a good friendship in your opinion? How have you managed betrayal and rejection? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. The power of women's friendships has been portrayed for centuries in literature, music, film, comedy. In the TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, there's a real focus on female friendships, and the song Friendtopia celebrates and spoofs Taylor Swift's Girl Squad and Squad Goals. Let's listen.
You have now entered the world of the best friend squad, and when you have friends that are this best, you feel unstoppable.
Unstoppable.
So prepare to surrender to the power of friendship, because we're going to take over the world. Like, actually, we are actually going to take over the world. Well, just look over there.
When my friends and I stick together, there's nothing we can't do. And when I say that, I specifically mean we're gonna stage a coup with the power.
I've been talking with psychotherapist Diane Barth. Her new book is I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. And joining us now is Deborah Tannen. She's a professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, who's written many best-selling books about how we communicate, men and women, mothers and daughters and sisters. And her latest book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. Deborah, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Indira. Nice to talk to you. And hi, Diane.
Hi, Deborah. I have been a fan of yours for so long. I just want you to know that.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad to bring you together. Now this could be the start of a new friendship.
Yeah,
no
kidding.
Squad. All right. So, ladies, I want to ask you first, Deborah, if you can react to that, you know, the squad goals. There is this concept of, you know, you have to be part of a group, and it's so important. You need to be in the cool crowd. You know, in your interviews that you did for your book, how much was that an overarching anxiety of girls and women that they needed to be part of the coolest group of BFFs?
Well, needed to be part of a group, period. This was something that I had found with mothers and daughters and also sisters and very much with friends. When women were hurt, very often it was because they felt they had not been included in something or had not been told something. So it's anxiety about that group. We all talk about FOMO, fear of missing out. I added to that FOBLO, fear of being left out, and FOGCO, fear of getting kicked out.
Oh, my goodness, it's too many acronyms.
Never mind the acronyms. But so many, I heard so many heartbreaking stories of a group turning on a member and kicking her out, and the other members of the group feeling guilty. I talked to women who in their 30s, 40s, still felt guilty because they didn't stand up for the one who was kicked out. So this is one of the ways that women's friendships are wonderful when they're working well and can create so much pain when things go awry.
Diane, I want to ask you, you know, the larger theme of your book is this: are these insecurities that we feel about our friendships all the time, the feeling of exclusion, the cliquishness, competitive friendships. As a mother of boys, it feels to me as if that social pressure is somehow unique to girls and women, is it?
How about yes and no?
Okay. Explain.
I think that Deborah and I both write about this concept of match. Deborah calls it matching. I'm assuming that's a linguistic term. In psychodynamic language, it's twinning, twinship. That especially for boys and girls at a certain developmental stage, there's a real need to feel like you've found your twin or that you are similar. And the problem with things like squad goals and cliques is that those twinning experiences help children separate from their families and they become part of another group. But when we get older, we need to develop a separate self also. And a lot of the, a lot of the groups won't let a member be different. And there's a huge amount of pressure to keep them similar. I think that that's part of what we're seeing in our culture today with men and women. I don't think it's just about women.
So the need to conform, in other words.
Yes.
Yeah, I would love to add to that.
Yes, Deborah.
It does seem to be a bit more with women, this feeling that your friend should say, oh, I know what you mean. The same thing happened to me. I feel the same way. And women who told me that they prefer men as friends often gave that as the reason. My female friends don't let you be different. If I say I feel differently, they either accuse me of thinking I'm something special, thinking I'm better than them, or putting them down or being judgmental. So I think it's somewhat more common in girls' groups, and it has so many ramifications where it's related to the jealousy that and the competition that Diane writes about. The feeling that you're supposed to all be the same, and if you're not, it threatens people. Some people will take it as a threat to the relationship, and I think that is behind a lot of the resentment that that women, especially women in positions of authority, managers, this comes up at work quite a bit, run into. And this also relates, you know, it's kind of interesting. I'd like to get back to that men want to fix it comment that you made.
Which I didn't credit you for, but it's definitely from you.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, but I would say it a little differently now. So when I wrote the book, You Just Didn't Understand, way back about women and men, and that was a scenario that a lot of people recognized. You know, she talks to her friend. That's great. Talks to her husband, wants the same kind of reaction, and he wants to fix it, and she's frustrated. I said at the time they don't want a solution. What I would say now is we don't want a solution right off the bat.
Right.
In the long conversation with a friend, it might be, oh, yeah, and then what did he say? And then what did you say? And that, you know, how'd that make you feel? And then why do you think he said that? And what might you say differently? And what do you think will happen? And you do work your way around to helping your friend find a solution, but you feel like you need that information to know what solution to give. But I think even more, that feeling that because your friend is willing to spend the time talking about it and working through those details, is a sign of caring.
You know, I love that image of we do want a solution. We just want it over time. Over time might be hours and days and months of listening to our problems, helping us work through them, helping us figure out, you know, what should be our life plan. And it reminds me of, you know, this famous friendship, which is, of course, Oprah Winfrey and Gayle King. And in this interview that Oprah did, she started to cry when she was talking about Gayle King being like the mother she never had, the sister everyone would want, the friend everyone deserves. Let's listen.
From the very first time we started our friendship, stayed up that first night and talked all night long, she has always been happier for me and everything that's ever happened to me than even I was. The therapy that I didn't have and the therapy that I don't need is because of my thousands and thousands of hours on the phone with Gayle. I get to release the day.
Diane, you're a therapist. That is such a powerful image. I'm not trying to put you out of business, but think about the therapy that, you know, Oprah and many of us didn't need to have because we had a best friend. I feel like I've never heard a man say that.
Sorry. I think that there are many times that is absolutely true, and it's really wonderful when it happens. I also have heard many women talk about that their friends were talking too much about themselves and that they weren't their friend's therapists. And what should they do about that? I one woman whose very dear friend was going through a terrible divorce said, and I heard this story many times, actually, but said, I can't listen to her anymore. I can't hear the same complaints and the same anger and the same bitterness anymore. She's going to have to move on or find another friend or go to therapy. I think sometimes it backfires. I also wanted to just go back to the male-female difference. One woman who I talked to, who's a professional businesswoman, said that she preferred male friendships because men were more direct than women. So I think there are many different aspects of this dynamic.
One of our listeners, Jim, writes in, "The joy of female friendship is on full display at Starbucks. That's why when there's a bunch of chatty ladies reinforcing the mutual bonding, I quickly pick up a New York Times and pretend not to listen to the continual and endless conversation. Their energy is amazing." All right. So some people are out there, even if they're not women, enjoying women's friendships.
But that's a great comment. Excuse me. But
yes, Deborah.
It's Diane.
Sorry.
That's okay. I think that some men get really turned off by that chat and that energy. So it's kind of wonderful that this guy liked it.
All right. Let's bring in one of our callers. Heidi is calling from New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome, Heidi.
Hi, Indira.
Hi.
I am the mother of three daughters. I had a daughter in my 20s, my 30s, my 40s. And one of the challenges has always been to navigate or to help them navigate those elementary school female friendships on the playground. I thought I'd share this analogy that sometimes seems to help them. It's an analogy of animals. I say, you're going to have different kinds of friends. Some of your female friends are going to be like the wolves. You run with the pack, you compete with them, and then some of them are like your snuggle puppy friends. You lick each other, you know, the make you feel good friends. And so the key thing is not to confuse the two. Don't try to snuggle with your wolf friends, and don't try to compete with your snuggle puppy friends.
What a wonderful analogy. Thank you. Deborah, do you have some comments on that? Because I know that you interviewed for your book, women between the age of 9 and 90. And I think,
actually, 97.
Okay, 9 and 97. There you go. And a whole century of women. And you found that many of the anxieties were the same across the ages. And is Heidi right in saying, you know, you need to think about, take a hard look at what kind of friend that person is?
Well, absolutely. And something Diane said earlier, too, there are many different kinds of friends. Sometimes women say they prefer men because they don't have to talk so much and they want to just do things with them. And that's something that some women enjoy with women friends. Shopping is a big one, or various kinds of sports that you play, or very often if they have kids, then the activities will be the activities the kids are doing, and then the mothers get time together that way, too. I think there are different friendships with different different goals, different times of life. But those patterns that I mentioned of feeling hurt because you didn't, you were left out of something, that seemed to come up at every age. And it seems to be something that especially girls are very creative about. A colleague of mine, Amy Sheldon, studied preschoolers and heard a little, these are preschoolers in a nursery school. A girl wants to join them playing house. They didn't really want her to. So they said, well, you can be the baby brother, but you aren't born yet.
All right. Hold that thought. All right. So I want to bring in another one of our callers. Emily is calling from Lancaster, South Carolina. Emily, welcome.
Hi, Indira.
Hi.
I wanted to point out how fertility issues can complicate female friendship.
Mm.
I lost my lifelong best friend, since we were 3 years old, when she was undergoing fertility issues, and my husband and I had an unplanned pregnancy with an IUD.
Mm.
And we tried so hard to be considerate when we told her, you know, we're pregnant again, but she was so frustrated with the fact that here we were trying to prevent pregnancies and getting pregnant, and she couldn't, that by the time my son was born, we were no longer friends.
Mm.
And it still hurts to this day, and he's 6 years old, but it did lead me to finding more different friends and growing as a person. But it's just the differences of our biology, woman to woman, can really change the course of our friendships and our lives.
Mm. Emily, I'm so sorry. Diane, I imagine this has probably come up in your practice.
In my practice and also in among the women who I interviewed. And this is one, this is a really hard conflict. And I'm sorry, Emily, that's very painful. I will say from the other point of view that I talked to many women who were the ones who couldn't get pregnant. And some of them were able to stay friends with the women who were getting pregnant. One woman said to me that she that it gave her hope that she could eventually have what her friend had. Another woman was the godparent of her friend's child and was never able to have children of her own, but was able to sort of make that godparent relationship part of her life. Another woman who I talked to was having fertility problems, and her sisters were all having babies, and her brothers' wives were all having babies. And she met a woman in her neighborhood who had a brand new baby, and she said to me, I just couldn't be friends with her. I couldn't even talk to her. But they ran into each other at the grocery store, and the other woman started to talk to this woman. And when the other woman somehow asked her if she had children, Raquel, which is the name of this, the woman who I'm talking about, started to cry. The woman who had the baby immediately did what it sounds like, Emily, what you tried to do. It said, you know, how sorry she was and how she understood how awful that must feel. She said, I don't know how you feel, but I can imagine it. And they became lifelong friends.
Mm.
You know, I could just add quickly.
Yes, Deborah.
Yeah, Deborah here. One of the insights I think we can get from these examples to maybe how painful it is when a friendship is lost, but also
yes,
that sometimes it's nobody's fault. That feeling of comparison that, you know, as Diane just said, some people can get past it, some can't. And in a way, I think it's a burden lifted to realize, no, it isn't anything you did wrong. It's just the human condition.
Mm. That's a very good point. Yep.
Well, I wonder, Deborah, since you're a linguist, if there are certain tools we can use to navigate a complication like what was just described in our friendship. Are there certain words or phrases in the few moments we have left before our break that we should use or avoid?
Well, I wouldn't say specific words, but I think the question, and we've talked a little bit here about directness, indirectness, women tend to be more indirect, that you really need to know the person you're talking to. Some will really appreciate your talking about it, as we just heard in Diane's anecdote. Some will really appreciate having your emotions acknowledged, and other people won't. Other people will be happier to just act as if nothing happened so they can forget about it.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and ponderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. We're talking about the trials and tribulations of female friendship, why some endure, and when to call it quits on the dysfunctional frenemies. You can join our conversations. Have you lost your best friend through illness or geography? Why is it so hard to make friends as we get older? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio or onpointradio.org. Some of you are already having your say. Min Pothoff says, female empathy makes it special. Perpetual self-judging complicates everything. Female friendship opens windows and doors. Friendship with men gives us different perspectives. And Valerie Intron says, can you be close friends to someone whose political viewpoint is radically different? I just don't feel the same way anymore to a friend who is a rabid Trump supporter. I'm speaking with Diane Barth, psychotherapist and author of the new book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives, and Deborah Tannen, linguistics professor at Georgetown. She's the author of a 2017 book, You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Female Friendships. And joining me now from Chicago, Illinois, is Kelly Terrell. She's an award-winning filmmaker and journalist, and she wrote in Vogue magazine about how Black female friendships are portrayed on television. Kelly, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Indira. Thank you so much for having me.
So we've been talking this hour about the importance and struggles of women's friendships, but friendships can hold different meanings and relationship styles for women across race, class, geography, on TV, and in real life. Here's the creator, co-writer, and actress of the HBO television series Insecure, Issa Rae, in an interview at the Paley Center for Media in April last year. She was talking about the friendship between the characters Issa, played by herself, and Molly, played by Yvonne Orji.
Even in developing it, I remember having the relationship with Issa and Molly in the script initially, and that was based off of a real-life friendship, and a lot of the real-life friendships that I have with women, with Black women specifically, and wanting to showcase just that kind of dynamic, because the negative representations and the relationship. A lot of reality shows pitted us against one another, and there was just, you know, there's a lot of conniving and backstabbing, and that just wasn't the relationship that I had with a lot of my female friends and the women in my life.
So you wrote about that relationship as it's portrayed on TV. What struck you about it?
You know, first of all, it's very rare that we actually see kind of Black women being friends. I think what Issa just said around reality shows, kind of like the Real Housewives of Atlanta and Love and Hip Hop, you know, we see Black women throwing shade and champagne bottles at each other. Or we see things like Olivia Pope, who's amazing on Scandal, her character, you know, that character. But yet she doesn't
have... Played by Kerry Washington.
But she does, Kerry Washington, yes. She doesn't, but Olivia Pope is the character. But Olivia Pope doesn't have any Black women in her life, really, you know, as friends. And so for me, watching Insecure has been one of the first times since, you know, Living Single that I've actually seen a mirror of myself, right? And watching that show made me feel like home. Because Black women, you know, friendships are so, so important.
So you feel like Issa and Molly's friendship as portrayed on Insecure looks like the friendships in your life. It's authentic to it.
Oh, definitely. One of my really great girlfriends came from New York into Chicago, and we were just chatting and having wine and saying bad words and laughing, you know, and it's just, it literally is the exact way that I interact with my Black girlfriends. And it's, like I said, it's beautiful to see. I mean, I think what really needs to be stressed here is that, you know, Black female friendship is just more than a connection. It's more than just having someone to have brunch with. Really, you know, these friendships are, to me, a mean for my emotional and mental survival. You know, with them, I'm allowed to be Black and female, and I can bring all of that to the table. And for me, that's so important.
Well, it makes me think about Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson, who are the voices behind the popular podcast Two Dope Queens. And in an interview they did with CBS This Morning, they said that they try to build the podcast around their real life friendship.
We've been working together almost 4 years, so we just spent so much time just like hanging out, just prepping for the show, or like going to concerts, or like talking trash about people, or like whatever.
Well, that's what's great is so that I think we always aim to, yeah. We're always like texting each other and all that stuff, and we always aim to make it seem like people are hanging out with us.
So, of course, there's the, you know, differences that you've talked about in race when it comes to female friendships. There's also that within one's race about age. And I wonder what you think about the two dope queens friendship versus those portrayed by the characters, you know, Angela Bassett and Whoopi Goldberg's characters in, for example, that movie How Stella Got Her Groove Back.
You know, that's a really hard question. I mean, I feel like definitely with age comes differences. You know, there are friendships I see between women, black women in their 20s that I cannot relate to at all. And, you know, I can see things, friendships between black women in their 60s that, you know, I strive to have that one day, you know, or sometimes I don't understand. You know, there are things with aging that I'm, you know, going to turn 40 that I don't quite, yeah. So sometimes those things are, getting confused. yeah, I mean, but I also still think there's a sisterhood that is a thread, like, you know what I'm saying, that goes from your 20s to your 30s and beyond, that still among black women is still very similar to me, even All though right. there are definitely issues with aging that are different.
Well, Deborah Tannen, you did address that issue of a wide diversity of women and girls who you interviewed for your book. Tell us about what was the diverse sort of, what kind of people did you interview, and what were the patterns that made women's friendships unique?
Well, I talked to a huge range, all ages, ethnic backgrounds, different native languages, different races, all that. I wasn't trying to characterize them by the groups they were part of. I just wanted a range of experience. But I'll mention something interesting that came up, and I'd be curious what Kelly has to say about this. But I was comparing French and American friends, and the question, if you're telling, you say you feel bad, you think you may have handled something wrong, you know, you feel like you maybe made a fool of yourself or just didn't do or say the right thing. And I think many Americans expect the friend to say, oh, it wasn't so bad. I would have done the same thing. It probably doesn't matter. He probably didn't listen. And the French woman pointing, friends, this is a woman who wrote about French friendships, points out, you really expect your friend to say, yeah, you really blew that one. And I have since spoken to African-American women who tell me that that is a little bit more like what they expect of friends. And I was intrigued quite recently to see a quote attributed to Michelle Obama that she felt Barack really needed friends to straighten him out when he had when he needed to be straightened out. That's, again, seemed to reflect a way that friendship could vary depending on kind of what your background is and what you expect of friends.
All right. Let's bring in one of our listeners. Rose is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Rose, welcome.
Hi, Indira. Thanks for having me on. Deborah, this question I think is really to you. It's more of a comment. You know, I'm a therapist in Charlotte, and I work with countless women. What I observe really more than anything else is that we are more disconnected than ever before. We have forgotten how to have discussions. I think that's in part to social media. That's in part to texting. But we are teaching in Charlotte how to have these discussions, how to be a friend. What does that look like? And I just wanted to see if you've also observed that in your practice. I wanted to let you know that we're doing something about it in Charlotte. We're starting a movement to combat what I feel, you know, has been created by social media.
Thank you so much for contributing that, Rose. And since she was talking about her practice, she's a therapist. I think, Diane, maybe that goes to you.
Well, I think that I tend not to blame everything on social media, but I do think that we have troubles with discussions and with differences. There's a lot of research that says that we actually gravitate to people who are like us. What we've been talking about in a lot of different ways is how much we feel validated by people who are like us. But I think that we do need to make space for differences and to make space for discussion. So I'm thrilled to hear that you've actually got something going on where you're helping people learn to talk about differences and differences of opinion. I'll just say that I spoke to several people who talked about what you're talking about, Kelly, but also a couple of women who had grown up in situations where they didn't have a lot of black friends, and who were you know, black women who didn't have a lot of black friends, and who were not who didn't feel like they had a foot in the right, or they had a foot in the wrong world. They felt that they their friendships were not the kinds of friendships that you're describing. And that they, one of the women told me she was working on developing her Black identity, which I thought was really interesting in that I wondered if there was a way for her to have an identity that was who she was, which wasn't defined by a particular, I'm going to say definition, but, you know, it wasn't defined by a certain structure. She was who she was.
Well,
and I also just, this is Kelly, I just also really think this is why sometimes for women of color and Black women, it's very difficult to establish kind of loving and empathetic relationships with white girlfriends. And I think the woman that you're referring to, you know, there are times where, you know, in order for me to have white girlfriends, sometimes I can't bring my Blackness to the table. I can only bring my femaleness. And I think, you know, I have this thing now with, like, if you don't understand or agree with kind of why Colin Kaepernick took a knee, it's really hard for us to be friends. You know, if you can go to the Women's March, but or you're just completely disinterested in the Black Lives Matter movement, we really can't be friends. You know, if you don't understand why Lena Dunham is problematic, we really can't be friends, right? So I feel like I need to, you know, it's very difficult for us to bring our full selves to the table. And the white girlfriends I'm very lucky that I do have in my life, I'm 100% myself. You know, they see me.
Yes, I think that's what's important.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is one way when we talk about sisterhood. If you don't have that, then there's no sisterhood at all. You know, you have to be able to be 100% yourself.
Thank you so much for adding that, Kelly. I think that's a really interesting perspective, and particularly talking about how across political issues, race-based issues, how difficult it becomes. Deborah Tannen, I don't want to leave behind this issue of social media, which the caller brought up. I mean, for better or for worse, social media keeps friends in constant contact, but I think it's also changed how girls and women relate to each other. What about the jealousy factor, the competition for who has, like, the, quote, best life on Facebook?
Yeah, and who has more friends and more likes. I think the social media plays up patterns that were there. So I kind of agree with Diane that I don't think it's totally new landscape, but it does play up and maybe aggravate things that were there. So yeah, women tend to be in touch with their close friends more frequently, let's say, than most men tend to be with their friends. They may feel, I haven't talked to him for a year, but if I needed him, he'd be there. The women might be in more frequent touch. And with texting and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all those others, WhatsApp, we have constant interaction with friends. And some people kind of are scornful of this. You know, I don't care what somebody had for dinner. It's kind of like what you would have, the conversation you would have had with a close friend at the end of the day, all the things you did, including what you had for dinner. But now it's broadcast. So some of that is great. You're constantly in touch. Some of it is aggravating the fear of being left out, because your chances that you're going to see what your friend was doing when you weren't there go way up. She's posting a picture on her Facebook page of the party she went to. And I think you were implying this, Indira. One person actually told me, a friend was talking to her on the phone about how a horrible time she had at this party. She was so miserable. They hang up. And the friend looks on her Facebook page, and there she is beaming at this party. And she said, if I hadn't just talked to her, I would have thought I missed the party of the year. So those are new liabilities.
Well, we've got a listener on Twitter who says, I've always had issues having female friends. The jealousy and competition many women feel, as well as the demanding nature of you have to return calls, etc., is too much for my taste. And it makes me think about this sort of theme that's out there, you know, in life and also in literature and in movies, the recurring depiction of the mean girl who's competitive or passive aggressive, exclusionary. In the 2004 movie Mean Girls, Regina, who's played by Rachel McAdams, is ousted from the lunch table by her friends, who are played by Lacey Chabert and Amanda Seyfried, for breaking the group's dress code. Let's listen.
Gina, you're wearing sweatpants. It's Monday.
So?
So that's against the rules, and you can't sit with us.
Whatever. Those rules aren't real.
They were real that day I wore a vest.
Because that vest was disgusting.
You can't sit with us!
you can't sit with us. It's that iconic line from Mean Girls. And I want to ask you, Diane, do any of us ever really outgrow that fear of being left out or kicked out?
I actually think the answer is yes. One of the wonderful things, I also talked to several older women, one who was in a residence, who talked about there is a hierarchy of who sits with who at lunch. But on the other hand, they don't take it so personally. She said, you know, she felt like she had people she liked to talk to, but she also liked to talk to other people at lunchtime, and those were their main social times. I think that it is, there is maybe always a sense of, I want to be one of the cool kids, I want to belong to the in-group, and it might hurt if I'm not. But I think as we get older, many women, many of the ones that I talked to, expressed more of a sense of feeling like they could be friends with different people. They didn't need to have one particular clique that they belonged to or that they felt left out of if they weren't part of.
All right, Diane, one last piece of advice from our listeners who are seeking your free advice. Jennifer from Jupiter, Florida says she's in her 30s and she feels a divide in her group of friends. Three of them have kids and two don't. What is your advice or input into that? And Jennifer from Beverly, Mass says that she has chronic illnesses and it's hard to get to trust people. Any brief thoughts?
I think you have to, what people have been saying all along, we have to choose our friends, you have to look for people who do understand, and you also have to know that different life stages bring changes in friendships.
Diane Barth, psychotherapist, author of the new book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. Thank you so much. Deborah Tannen, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, author of You're the Only One I Can Tell. And Kelly Terrell, journalist and filmmaker. Thank you all so much for joining me. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Coming up tomorrow, all eyes on South Korea for the start of the Winter Olympics. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and this is On Point.